You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody, Here District, the fantastic voyage. I'm the captain of this vessel, Marcus Johnson, along with my first mate, Chris Johnson. We are the only father and son tandem in the history of college basketball to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA, 1995 for Chris, 1975. He's representing. We are elated, especially, I mean, the draft, as of this recording, the draft has just happened. Summer League is right around the corner. Indeed. And so we're going to talk about some draft stuff. Well, none better to talk about this stuff than our guest today, Zach Harper. Welcome, Zach. We appreciate you coming on, man.
Oh, thank you guys for having me.
Man, that's a live Jimmy Butler painting behind you. What's going on with that? First of all, that caught my eye immediately.
This is my guy Evan EMPDX. He did these, and he has a lot of great art. So he knows I like Jimmy Butler a lot. So he sent me these, but he's got just about anything you would want painted or get prints of. He can do it, man. He's incredible.
So your hair and Jimmy's hair a little similar. No,
yeah, I'm trying to get a little bit. You know, we got a little bit different styles on what we can do with our hair, but I'm doing what I can. Yeah,
a little textural thing going on. Difference, but I get the flavor, man. We appreciate you, man. But Zach is I got just a voluminous list of credits, and I got a. Got to say them all just to give him his props. Yes, National sir. NBA staff writer and podcast host, The Athletic, radio host, Sirius XM NBA Radio. I listen to it all the time. And Mad Dog Sports Radio. We had Mad Dog on a few weeks back. And then, Chris, you got excited when I mentioned this, the host of Cinephobe Podcast. Why'd you get so excited, Chris, at the Cinephobe Podcast?
Yeah, because Zach is a movie head, and the whole Cinephobe series, dog. I mean, you got to really just experience it, MJ, to really get it. You know, you got to be in it. You got to be in it to experience it.
Okay.
But it's off the hook. It's legendary.
Appreciate
that. You would love it. You would love it, MJ, because you're a movie head. You're a thespian. Well, you're a theater arts major. Get it all.
Well, let me throw this out at Zach just to get a barometer, just a litmus test of where he is. Is Sinners the greatest movie you've ever seen, or where does Sinners rank?
I just saw Sinners. I thought it was great. Like, so I'd heard all this hype about it, and I thought it was great. Not the greatest movie I've ever seen.
I tend to
go towards. It lost me a little bit with some of like the banjo playing, and it turned into a vampire movie. I went in not knowing what it was going to be. All I heard was it was great. I don't think Michael B. Jordan is the greatest actor I've ever seen. Okay. I've seen a lot of things where I'm like, okay, because everyone's always like, oh, Fruitvale Station. Though I was like, yeah, that was 2007. Like that, you know, like that's a long time ago.
Well, which the Creed movies, he was cool, but the double dose of Michael B. I mean, it was kind of a little distracting for
me. It's a lot of Michael B. Jordan. It's an excessive amount. Yes.
And as you mentioned, at the juke joint place, they got to travel through time and get the break dancers and all that. You know, just a little.
Well, that part I was like, okay, I see what they're going for here.
Well, I saw what they're going for.
This is losing me a little. Yeah.
But it took me out of the moment. You know, they kind of lured me in, then they let me back out with all this.
Yeah. But anyway, once I hit the DJ part, I was like, hold on, what's happening here?
Okay. So I can roll with you there. We're kind of on the same page with that. And it's a good solid movie. Don't get me wrong. But in terms of just this blockbuster Godfather like classic, you can miss me with all.
No. We're not going there with it. Yeah. We're not going there with it.
You like The Godfather? You're a Godfather fan?
Love The Godfather. Godfather. You know what I think? Also, this may be a hot take. While it is not on par with the first two, I think The Godfather 3 gets a little too much heat against
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
It's not a bad movie. It's just not close to the first two.
It doesn't live up to one or two, so everybody's going to knock it. For sure.
That three was who? That was Sophia?
Sophia Coppola. Yeah.
See, okay. Yeah.
And he was an OG. He was old school. He was old school old school.
Yeah. I got to watch it again because, you know, I'm just so enamored with one. Two, I liked a lot.
I mean, one is just like,
one is perfect.
You're absolutely right on that. So let's talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, man. And so everybody was kind of, you know, speculating. We've been doing the last couple of shows about what do you do at 47? What's going to be available at 47? And we found out. It's all about Bogleyube. I got to say that now. Bogleyube. Markovich, and Bogey is what we're calling him, so that's what I'm going to call it. But his mama named him Bogleyub, so I think I'll at least reference Bogleyub once or twice.
Bogleyub.
Okay, I mean, so, and here's my take on it. And you guys chime in after I get done with this. But so I looked at some comparative numbers, and the Adriatic League, tough league. The Bogdanoviches both came through there. Dario Saric. Goran Dragic, Beno Udra, one of the Bucks' assistants, Nemez Bihalisa, who's turned out to be a much better player than I think people really realized. I liked him. So it's a competitive league. This kid was 19 years old, and from what I could glean, averaged 14-7 in the Adriatic League. 19 years old. So I looked at Nikola Jokic's stats from a similar age, 18, 19 years old. He averaged like 11-6. And so the prospects for development, I'm not putting him obviously on Jokic's level of multiple MVP and all that good stuff, one of the top players in the world. But, he looks like he could be someone that the Bucks can work with over the next few years. Zach, your feelings?
Yeah, I haven't seen a ton of him other than a little bit of the film that they showed and a little bit here. I've read Sam Vecenie, who's one of my guys at The Athletic, does a phenomenal job. He knows everybody. Like, yeah. I'm shocked. Like, I'll be sitting with him at Summer League and I'll see a guy who's at the end of like the Miami Heat Summer League roster and everything. And I'll be like, wow, that guy's got crazy long arms. He's like, oh, this guy here. This was him in high school. This was him in college. And like, he knows everybody. Right. So I read Sam. Sam, talked about him of like, this guy's great in transition, little between, a 4 and a 5, not quite as physical, not, maybe can't play in drop coverage, but maybe not quite perimeter ready defensively, but very active, good feel for the game, thinks he's going to be a shooter at the NBA level. And I think that's what you want to see in kind of that big man position now. You want to see a guy that is active, that makes good decisions, that can shoot and spread the floor a little bit. You're not looking for a star at 47, right? You're just looking for a guy. If you can get a rotation player in the second round, that's a massive hit at this point. I think you would love to get a Draymond or a Jokic or, a manager. You would love to get a guy who you can put some accolades on at some point. But especially in the Bucks position with their roster crunch and their financial crunch, if you get a guy that, whether he comes over now or he's stashed and comes over a year or two from now, and you can come in and be in the rotation and be an active big man, that is such a valuable position. So I think there's a lot to work with there, but it is a project.
I think that the Bucks have something in mind for this kid. He showed me some stuff defensively on the perimeter that makes me believe that he could be a valuable piece. He's high value as a second round pick, so developing him would make a lot of sense for the Bucks. Again, I mean, it's not something that's going to blow you away, but Tyler Smith and AJ didn't really blow me away last year, but Tyler's kind of poised this year to maybe step up a little bit, have a better year with a little bit of development. So I think that Markovic might kind of follow that same path.
Well, let's hear from Milt Newton. Let's play our cut number one, talking about basketball IQ tools and all that good stuff that goes into a really, really solid basketball team. Milt Newton.
He's a young player. Getting young, new infusion of blood is something that's really important for us to prolong, our where we are as a team in terms of trying to win and win consistently for a long time. But I think what he brings to the table kind of fits the puzzle in regards to how we want to play more up tempo, defending the rim. We believe that he brings all those intangibles to our team, and it's something that we feel that we can develop even more.
All right. So there's Milt talking about the intangibles. Now, the one thing that Chris, you talked about his movement on the perimeter. Zach, I mean, when I look at his ball skills out away from the basket, the passing, how comfortable he was, the ability to handle and push and show a little trickery off the dribble, just watching clips. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, with that in mind, like what Chris is saying, like what you're saying, Zach, I mean, he's at number 47, but where was Jokic? Jokic was late second round or someplace.
Say he was like 45 or 42 or something like that. Yeah.
So you just never know, exactly what you're going to have. And my thing, Zach, and I'd like to hear your opinion on this, is like a guy like Jokic, I mean, it's a different era now. Now teams and the NBA landscape as a whole, it's more embracing of the big Euro. Chris, do you remember Ivan Radinovic, Zach, from Arizona? You know, he reminds me, looking at kind of just the first movement. take just in the his look, the shoulders, the size, you know, but Radenovic didn't last two games in the summer league with the Clippers because that wasn't the vibe back in the early 2000s. Now, it's a different vibe. You think that that may play a big part in just having more patience and nurturing a young man like this along?
I think so. And I think something that Sam wrote, Sam Vecenie wrote about him was how good his hands were. And that, and something I think is big for a guy of this size. And he wrote about how productive it is. And you kind of mentioned this, how productive he is at such a young age in Europe. And, you know, even still in Europe, like a young guy being able to play at this early age is still rare, right? I know Luka got a chance and everything, but it's still rare in Europe. And the thing that really took me from what Sam wrote is he has good hands and he doesn't have to slow down catching on the move. And I think that is such an underrated part for a guy who's like 6'10", 6'11", to be able to catch on the move in full stride. That's a massive skill to be able to use. So, if he's cutting in the open floor, if he's cutting in the half court and he doesn't have to like kind of chop his steps at all, and he's got those big long strides and he catches on, like that's just so good at eating up that space. And whether he can, you know, then move the ball to someone else on the perimeter who's in the corner, or he can then take those big strides and get to the rim, that is just like you just maximize that movement. And you maximize, he doesn't have to like fumble the ball. He doesn't have to worry about how he's catching it. That is going to at least offensively create big problems for that opposing defense.
Yeah, and that skill set that you're talking about, Zach, it's going to allow his transition, I think, to be a lot easier. He's going to adjust quicker because he shows a similar thing on the defensive end as far as his reaction. Like what you're talking about, being able to catch, move, make a decision. Well, he's able to slide against smaller guards. A guard might hesitate, hands up. He's reacting to it with a hand up too. Like that's what I really, that jumped out on tape was his reaction speed. And then his fluidity, like you're talking about, this ability to move, make plays. It's like those awkward kind of moments in basketball that he makes look really easy.
You know, I think about oftentimes how, and it's that old Japanese warrior mentality that they told me about when Elvin Hayes and I were in a taxi cab in Tokyo back in the early 80s. And our guide was telling us that the warrior mentality, once you lose to the United States, then you try and adopt kind of everything they do and try and assimilate your culture and match your culture to theirs. This is really interesting. But in basketball, professional sports, we see a lot of that too. So that takes me to the Thunder and the Pacers too. But just homegrown talent, you know, homegrown, home developed. Jalen Williams and that Chet Holmgren, that whole crew. Now SGA was brought in from the Clippers in the Paul George trade. But still, you know, he wasn't a superstar MVP caliber. We didn't know what we had. You know, they didn't know what they had when he first got there. How much do you think that's going to come into play with the league as a whole and then the Bucks specifically, but the league as a whole in terms of what that philosophy has brought to this league?
I mean, I think especially with this horrible collective bargaining agreement with the second apron and everything, which I hate. Like, I really hate it, but it's...
Why do you hate it?
I think the second apron is poorly designed as a hard cap, right? Well, I think it's designed as a hard cap. I think it's poorly... I think it's a poor idea because I think the owners are working against themselves. I'm fine with like luxury tax penalties and restrictions in some level. I don't think it should happen against guys that you have drafted and signed and developed and everything. I think there should be some kind of percentage, you know, with the players that you have drafted and developed and re-signed, that it doesn't count against that. Guys you bring in, trade for, sign as free agent, sure, I'm for that. But I don't think it... I think when you draft well and you develop and you re-sign those guys, I don't think you should be penalized for that. And I think that's where the league missed the mark there. But in this era of the second apron, developing those young players, and especially those bargain players that are, you know, late first round or in the second round, that is going to become so imperative. I mean, just with the Thunder, like, yes, the Chets and the Jalen Williams, like those are big, but Aaron Wiggins became such a massive role player for them. I know Isaiah Joe wasn't a guy they drafted, but they brought him in on kind of a small deal and turned him into a really important role player. Even the other Jalen Williams like had some very important minutes for them this year. Like just all these guys that they have developed, they've got, you know, guys waiting in the wings to get minutes. You know, Kendrick Williams, who they was a very important role player for them throughout the year and a guy that was big in their locker room. All these guys who are just like, you know, players, you know, 5 through 12, 5 through 13 within that roster. If you can create those guys to do this, I mean, we saw that with the Pacers and the players that they had throughout their rotation. You have to hit on a lot of those players to have that depth and to have guys that can contribute throughout, whether that's buying your stars minutes in the regular season or guys that can contribute throughout a playoff run. It is just so important. You can't really get away. Like, I know the older mentality of like, hey, we shorten our rotation to 7 guys, 8 guys, and this is how we get through the playoffs. Maybe. I'm not saying it can't happen anymore, but I think the Thunder and the Pacers showed this depth is important. Having multiple players in a half court sense that can attack off the dribble, can initiate, can attack closeouts. That's important. Like, it can't just be one guy isolating and then everyone else is just standing around. That heliocentric style, just, it, you know, guys are cold just standing there waiting for the ball. You need to have guys on the move. And that all comes, in my opinion, from player development. And so having these guys that you bring in, you know, kind of on smaller contracts and that you build up, I just think that's imperative to success in the future.
New wave roster building. I mean, it's the way to go. Like, yeah. I was reading somewhere today, I think Oklahoma has like 7 second-rounders on that roster, top to bottom, something crazy, a large number, right? Obviously, you're going to need to balance out the roster, but hitting on cheap developmental projects, it's like, it's the new wave. Like, you gotta take that gamble and you gotta try to see if you can develop a guy at a second round rate into a full-time starter that could potentially contribute at a high level, 11, 12 points a game. You're paying a guy, you know, whatever that second round rate is, but if he's producing 12 points a game, I mean, that value. And I think more teams are going to mine the draft. Now, look, NIL has some kind of consequences, right? So it thinned out that latter part of the second round as far as the talent pool. Some guys that are paid to go back to school, you know, might have been in the mix for the Bucks. But let's make no mistake about Markovic and this mega program over there in Serbia or wherever it is. Serbia. This is a high-level program. You're talking about Nikola Jokic. Dad, you talked about him. Jovic, but Topic from Oklahoma City. So I trust those kind of guys. And they sent a couple of guys to the University of Illinois as well on some big bread. I thought this guy might end up being an Illinois team with a bunch drafting him. But my point is, like, the pick. I'm just trying to, you know, assess the pick. It's a safe pick. To me, this is a safe pick. This is as good as you could probably get. In number 47, I mean, it's a gamble, but it's a good gamble with all things considered.
Now, one thing, guys, that was interesting for me is that when I was working college basketball at Fox Sports, so Sam Presti, the great personnel guy down in Oklahoma City, started out in Seattle. I did the final Seattle game, Chris, me and Kevin Calabro in San Antonio, the Save Our Sonics, I mean, the very final. But so Sam Presti. We had a great conversation at a practice, and I found out he played D3 basketball, and I gave him all the props and respect that a college basketball player deserves. He was kind of shortchanging himself. I only played – no, man, you played college basketball. You know, you're a baller. So anyway, so Sam would pick my brain, Zach. And so during the drafting of O.J. Mayo, Jared Bayless, and Russell Westbrook, Sam gave me a call, and he's like, Marcus, who do you think is the best of these three? So I said, well, Sam, right now the best – NBA-ready guy right now is O.J. Mayo, without question. You know, 19, 20 points a game at USC as a freshman. Sam's like, okay, I agree. So now I'm going to ask you something that I really wanted to ask you. Who's going to be better in 5 years? So I was like, I think Russell Westbrook could be the best player of the three, even though he's not right now. But he's got a bigger upside.
Right.
And so Milton Newton kind of talked about that with this young man, something we've been talking about in 19, Adriatic League, all the tough competition. Mm-hmm. Let's see what Milt has to say about the upside of Bogey.
For us, free agency is the vehicle that we believe will help us stay at the level and beyond to win a championship where we are. And so a player like that, it's like I said before, it's the upside that we see.
And so that's the big thing when you're making this selection at 47, because we've got to figure out, and you guys touched on it, heliocentric. That, you know, I heard that term from a guy that's persona non grata around the Bucks organization, so I won't throw his name out there, former. but he talked about he used to talk about that in his writings all the time, heliocentric. And that means the ball is in this guy's hands the whole time. We're talking 38, James Harden. Think of Harden at a 40% usage rate or guys like that. But the game is changing. Giannis heliocentric, not too far removed from the way the Bucks had approached him. Zach, do you think that that philosophy needs to change or will change kind of organically?
I think it'll be tough because of the Dame injury, right? Like I think that makes this next season tough with that. I think for me, I want to see Giannis getting the ball on the move as much as possible, because if you're a defender, what do you do? Like, him catching the ball on the move, like, it's got to be a nightmare. Like, you're not stepping up, you're not getting in the way of that. He's so strong. You're not knocking the ball away from him. You're not reaching in and getting deflections. So I'd like to see him get the ball on the move, but also that's not entirely realistic on every single possession, right? So I'd like to see him get the ball, you know, kind of in the post, mid post, see him face up a little bit. I don't think it has to be a lot of dribble, you know, isolate and then see him go to work. But you do need that at times as well, because he is so good at drawing fouls. So I think it's just a mixture. As long as it's a mixture, even if it's a high usage rate for him, it's just varying up the looks. And so I think the key for him is going to be what you put around him. He's obviously, you need shooters around him, like, because he's got to have the space to operate. If you get the shooters around him and he has space to operate, and you give those help defenders even a half second of a hesitation in moving over, there's nothing that the defense can do. Like, you're just praying at that point that he screws up, he messes up and makes a mistake. So I think as long as you can get, you know, good quality shooters at some kind of reasonable price that fits into what their constraints are, I think that's the key. But it's really going to be about maximizing what he can do on the move, what he can do within that half court, and finding that help. You know, maybe Kyle Kuzma can help with some of that in creating some offense, but he's going to have a bounce back in that. You know, he's going to have to be the player he was a couple of years ago rather than what we've seen the last year or so. But it really is until Dame is back and healthy. That's the struggle that they're going to have with that roster building.
Zach, so my question is, you rated the Bucks wide open East kind of potential below Detroit and Orlando. Now, is the Dame injury a big reason why you did that, or you don't like the roster construction of the Bucks, or just kind of break down your thought process?
It's strictly the Dame injury. It's strictly that. If Dame was healthy, the Bucks would maybe be towards the top for me, because even though it hasn't completely clicked in the way we maybe expected when that trade happened, I'll take that talent with those two against just about anything out there. I do believe that they, you know, with the reps and everything, that they'll find what they need. And I think it's probably easier than, you know, to put players around those two, because, I mean, look, I know Dame hasn't gone to the finals before. I trust him. We've seen what Giannis, I mean, I think people still underappreciate Giannis. We thought he blew out his knee, and then a week later, he's dropping 50 in a closeout game. You know, like, it's, I mean, I like, we really thought he was done, right? Like, we thought he was like, I really, maybe you guys didn't. I thought it was over. Like, I thought he had blown out his knee and we were going to see him 9 months from now. And then he dominated the way he did in the NBA finals in just a spectacular way. So I trust those two, and I trust putting players around them. I don't think while it is a challenge, I think those guys make players around them better. So the fact that you remove Dame and it's hard to just replace that because you still have that salary on the books, that's the only reason that I have them behind those other two teams.
Is there anything they could do in free agency that would potentially move them up on the woe meter to four deers? Because I know they got two now, but, you know, is there anything they could do in this offseason, though, that could probably bump them up?
It's going to depend on what they're able to do with, you know, if they rule Dame is out for the year, then they can do the disabled player exception. I believe they can spend up to half of his contract, which I think he's owed like 50 something million. So it could be like 25 to 27 something million in terms of that exception. You can bring in a nice player for that, right? In somewhere in that range. I don't know. I didn't look at the books exactly to see what that would put them up against in terms of the money. But if you can bring in even a guy for 10 to 15 million as a point guard, you know, even if, you know, just a guy who's like kind of a good backup to a solid starter, just having that guy in the mix to run some stuff with Giannis, I think would be a massive, massive help. It doesn't take replacing him with a star. You don't need that. You just need a good, competent point guard to come in and just help out with some of that playmaking. So I don't think it takes much, but you do need a guy.
Hey guys, I want your thoughts on this because, you know, we talked about heliocentric, putting the ball in one guy's hands, and Giannis's usage rate has fluctuated. It was down last year, I think 34, 35. It's been up as high as 38, almost 40% prior to Dame getting here. But when I think about the template, we think about OKC. I mean, God dang, Shai Gilgeous led the league in scoring, right? I mean, 30-plus points. I mean, you know, the big shots down the stretch. I'm thinking about his ability to create separation, create space to get his shots off. Now, you know, offensive foul, Michael Jordan, Brian Russell type separating. Okay, that's a whole other discussion. But do you think Giannis and his skill package, Chris Sack, right now is evolved enough to be that guy in a crunch type situation?
What I loved about what he did last year, and I took note of this a lot throughout the season, is, you know, and I know it tailed off towards the end of the season, but he was averaging like 20, 21 points in the paint.
Yeah.
Right. Like we literally hadn't seen that since Shaq in 2000, 2001. Hmm. I mean, 21 points in the paint, like that's a lot. That it was like 23rd or 24th in the league would have been his scoring average just in the paint alone. So I love that he was kind of getting rid of that outside jumper and going in there. I do like it when he plays more like a big man than a wing. Not saying he can't do it, because him attacking from the wing is obviously very good for him, but I want to see him, because he is so big and strong, and I know it can wear guys down, but because he is so big and strong, I do like him just being a bully. Him playing bully ball, I think, is his best mode, because it is going to draw a ton of fouls. It's going to wear the defense out, and it's going to put the other team in foul trouble, to where it's not just him getting to the free throw line. It's other players, like those little touch fouls later in the quarter. Yeah. It's going to get all those guys to the free throw line. So to me, that's the best use of his skill set. I don't think it has to be a lot of like dribble, step back jumper, dribble, pull up jumper. I think him just being the monster that he can be, that is his best usage.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's a healthy diet of the monstrosity. And then when they sag or they put up that wall, you have the ability to knock down the shot. I think his mid-range and the improvement on that mid-range jumper over this summer is going to be paramount. And like to your point, Zach, it's not always about, for Giannis, it's like working on a different way to get it off. It's not always about the rhythm step back that people can pick up on and eventually started to sit on and wait for, kind of like LeBron's strive for greatness. You know, what he does is,
you know, stare at the ball. Yeah.
You know, Giannis' step back is kind of moving into that territory where you know what's coming. He got it in his left hand. He's doing his little
fizzy. He starts rocking and you feel that rhythm.
Get his feet together and get that nice 1-2. So it's about different ways to get that jumper off as a sort of answer or response to the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was much improved, to his credit. I mean, yeah, we want him to continue to get better and better, but that mid-range
he's off the hook, Dad. I'm just saying, there's room for more improvement.
That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying it's trending in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Yes.
There was some question as to whether or not he'd ever develop that
mid-range.
And in this season, we saw him take it more, saw him knock it down, mid-40s, 47, somewhere in there. But he was up in that 75, 80th percentile, according to Cleaning the Glass. But let's talk about the supporting cast, Zach. If you had to have a pecking order of restricted and unrestricted free agents, how would you list the guys that you think are with Dame?
Priorities.
The priorities in terms of who would you like to see come back in terms of optimizing this Bucks roster this season?
I mean, I'm a big Gary Trent Jr. fan, so like I think he can be a massive help. I think whether he's had a down year or a good year, I know he's a little on the smaller side for a wing, but he's got a good wingspan. I trust his jump shot from year to year, whether it's up or down. I just trust him. I think he's a dog defensively, so whether he's had an injury year or a healthy year, I just think he's a guy that I trust consistently. So I think he's going to have a bounce back year.
Yeah.
So he's someone that I would want to bring back. I like Torian Prince. You know, he shot the ball well. I like Torian Prince. So I just want shooters around him, right? Like I want guys there. Obviously, you would love for Bobby Portis to be back. Bobby is just he's just one of the best. He's one of the best dudes in the game. He's one of the top bench forwards in the game, where he wants to come off the bench or start. As long as he's in the mix, I think those three guys, if you can bring them back, I think that's a great start to the supporting cast. And I think, maybe those are kind of obvious choices. But to me, There's good outside shooting. There's good defensive understanding there. And those are just three veterans who know how to play.
Zach, where do you stand on KPJ? I know he's got a player option, but he's a vital piece. Like, he's somebody that the Bucks are going to need, because there's no one on the roster that is as dynamic as him with Dame out, be able to, you know, handle the ball, pick and roll, size, et cetera. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts?
He might be your answer to a playmaker, right? We're talking about a guy who can, you know, them picking up a lead guard to kind of help Giannis out. He is someone, like, I worry about kind of how erratic his play is from time to time. But if you can hone that talent, I mean, he's as talented as anybody else on that roster, right? I mean, he's super dynamic. We've seen it at every stop that he's been in, that he will have these games that you're just like, where is that consistently, right? Like, he's so good.
Yeah.
You just have to find a way to harness that into more consistency. And I would rather him be more even across the board than the highs and the lows, and just in terms of production. But I mean, man, you could do a lot worse than him as one of your lead playmakers. So yeah, I would love for him to be back as well. I just want to see them harness that into a more consistent play, even if it doesn't mean the highs.
He could just minimize
the lows. Yeah, because he's so dangerous in the open court. He's so good. I think you can run pick and rolls with him and Giannis. I don't know how you stop that. Like, yeah, you can drop back and everything. Both those guys are wrecking balls going towards the basket. So I think that would be a great addition. I just want to see that harness into more consistent play. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, that guy's as talented as it gets.
All right, Zach, before we let you go, we got to circle back on the Cinephobe podcast tip. So now, I've seen your friends and neighbors, John Hamm, love it. I've seen You, which is Netflix, which is really, really. See, the first four seasons.
Yeah, same.
I'm in the season where he's in England. It's kind of losing me a little bit, but it's a good show. give me three or four other, either out in theaters now or on Netflix or streaming, something that you think is a must see for.
Okay.
A guy like myself. You know my taste a little bit. I'm a Godfather guy. Sinners, I'm okay with. Not enamored. So what do I need to see? Give me three or four suggestions here.
All right. Let me see what's out there in terms of newer stuff. You know what? All right. This is a risk. I'm gonna suggest a risk here, okay?
I love it. Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen the first one. This is it's a dumb action movie, but it's fun. Okay, Den of Thieves 2.
Okay,
I don't know if you've seen the first one, but the first one's like pretty good.
Okay.
First one, pretty good, but the second one, it's a risk. It's real dumb, but it's fun.
But Den of Thieves 1 is. I mean, Den of Thieves is.
Den of Thieves 1's solid. It's like good 7.5 out of 10.
Okay.
Second one's a risk. Trust me. Second one's a risk here. But
Den of Thieves is good. I like Den of Thieves. I watched 1 and 2, but I'll start with 1 and then, you know, see how that moves me, and then maybe go into 2. But go ahead. Den of Thieves.
All right. Do you like horror movies at all? Like thriller horror movies at all?
I mean, more the psychological thrillers as opposed to the special effects thrillers.
Okay. Okay. This is perfect then. Perfect. You like a psychological thriller?
Yeah.
Long Legs.
Okay.
This is Nicolas Cage.
When did it come out? A couple years ago?
Last year.
Last year.
Okay. Last year. It's streaming now. Nicolas Cage plays a killer of some sort.
Right.
I don't want to give too much away here, but an FBI, a female FBI agent is investigating these odd deaths, and it's more psychological thriller than anything. It's not really but it is. I saw it in the theaters. It freaked me out.
Images of Jodie Foster and Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, it's like a what if we made this real weird? Yeah,
I covet what I see.
And I'm in the bag for Nicolas Cage. Like, I think he's phenomenal. Even in the bad movies, he's.
I like him. Well, the thing about Nicolas Cage is that he takes risks. You know what I mean? With his character. He's going to bring something interesting to the table. It may work. It may fall flat on his face. Mm-hmm. But he's going to swing. He's going to put himself out there. He's going to swing every time.
Yeah. And then let me see one more for you. You know what? I'm gonna throw a little bit older movie. I don't know if we just did it for Cinephobe. This is also a risk, but we did just do it. Have you seen the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie Nowhere to Run?
That's a way back
1993.
Oh, 93.
So this is when you were in the mix, you know. This is when you were heavily in the mix.
Nowhere to run. Okay.
You know, you could have played like a sheriff here in the in this small town. Like you could have been in the mix fighting Jean-Claude. Like,
but that's not the movie where he does the splits and holds two walls with it.
No, that's Cyborg. That's Cyborg. Okay, that's okay, a little early. That's like 88. That's okay, like 86.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But this is one where he plays an escaped prison guy who goes to a small town, and he's now going against this big bad development company. It's real weird. But you know what? It's dumb. It's fun. Kieran Culkin's in it as a child, and it's got a good bad guy in it. So did that for Cinephobe, so I'll use that to promote our latest Cinephobe episode.
I'm gonna check those out. Den of Thieves, one and possibly two. Long Leg, Nicolas Cage, and Nowhere to Run.
Long Legs though. Long Legs is legit. Like I think you're gonna love that.
I'll start with that.
The other one's a risk. Yeah.
We appreciate you coming by here, District Man. Got to have you on again, and just a lot of great information and continued success in everything you do. Thank you.
Oh, big fan. Thank you, guys. Anytime.
All right.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.